This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent and diverse campus community radio from Simon Fraser University.
Quick note that the following episode of Canada Land may contain subject matter and language that some people will find offensive.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the trade war and a completely different strategy for winning it. It involves printer ink and horse semen.
That's why ink is like the most expensive fluid that you can buy as a consumer today. I always say you print your grocery lists with fluid that costs more than the semen of a Kentucky Derby winning stallion.
Wait for that.
Today, the United States informed us they will be imposing 25% tariffs on Canadian exports to the United States and 10% on Canadian energy. Canada will be responding to the U.S. trade action with 25% tariffs against $155 billion worth of American goods. In this moment, we must pull together. Thank you. Merci. Vive le Canada.
The thing about this trade war is just that it's so stupid. If you shoot yourself in the foot, we'll show you. We'll shoot ourselves in the face. I mean, this cannot be said enough. All these headlines about Trump slapping tariffs on Canada makes it sound like he's slapping us. And I guess he is, indirectly. But the way that he does that is by slapping his own citizens. It's Americans who he's taxing. It's the U.S. government charging U.S. citizens outrageous levies when they buy Canadian products. And our comeback, Trudeau will slap Canadians. He'll slap his citizens in response. We're the ones who will have to pay our government retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods that we want to buy. Not Trump, not Americans. That is how a trade war goes. Two countries just slapping themselves in the face until one of them can't take it anymore and cries uncle. The whole thing is just so dumb. So, is there any other way to fight back? Something that is not dumb. Something smart. Well, Canadian novelist, essayist, and activist Cory Doctorow is one of the smartest people I know. And he has an idea. He thinks Canada should hit America back where it hurts, right in the dongle. And late last week, when it became very clear that Trump was not bluffing, Cory joined me from his home in Burbank, California, to share this different idea, maybe a much better idea, for how Canada could fight back. Wait for it. Cory Doctorow, you have a different strategy. What is it?
Well, I like to think it's the politically canny strategy, which is rather than hitting Americans with a tariff that will make everything more expensive in Canada, we change a law that we passed in 2012 that makes it illegal for Canadians to improve or modify American products. And that has been used to stop Canadians from repairing stuff, from making their own app stores and so on, and draws just billions of dollars out of the Canadian economy every year and sends it to America and constitutes the highest profit margin of America's largest businesses, so that we would actually hit them really where it hurts rather than just hurting ourselves and hoping that they get so sad by watching us hurt ourselves that they change their minds.
Can you explain that? Like, what specifically is this that we're doing instead of just slapping tariffs on their stuff?
So in 2012, Canada passed a law that makes it illegal to bypass a digital lock on a copyrighted work. And so when you hear that, it sounds very abstract. But broadly speaking, because everything has software in it, what this law does, it says that changing that software is illegal so long as there's a lock in front of it. And so if the software stops you from putting a third-party ink cartridge in your printer, then refilling or buying a third-party ink cartridge becomes a crime. And what that means is that the companies that sell you your ink can just ratchet up the price of ink because they know that you can't do anything about it. You have no self-help measures available to you. That's why ink is like the most expensive fluid that you can buy as a consumer today. You print your grocery lists with fluid that costs more than the semen of a Kentucky Derby winning stallion. And
that's a handy reference point.
I used to say vintage Veuve Clicquot, but, you know, I think my audience is more familiar with prize horse breeding than they are with fine French champagne. So I've switched to that one. But it also stops you, you know, if you're a person with diabetes who has a continuous glucose monitor and an insulin pump, and you want to use some third-party software to connect the two, especially if you've got like a little kid who's in daycare and you want to be able to dose them with insulin when their glucose gets low without relying on like daycare workers, it stops you from changing the software in your glucose monitor. And this is a thing that people with diabetes do, but a thing that the law gets in the way of. It also means that like an independent mechanic can't fix your car without getting permission from the manufacturer, paying thousands of dollars if they can get permission at all to get a diagnostic tool. And it means that even if you put the manufacturer's own parts in your car or your tractor, the car and the tractor, they won't recognize those parts until an authorized technician types an unlock code in, and it's illegal to bypass the software so it doesn't need that unlock code. So this is why farmers can't fix their own tractors. It's also why people at hospitals couldn't fix their own ventilators. Medtronic, the largest ventilator manufacturer in the world, actually the largest med tech manufacturer in the world, uses the same gimmick. It's called parts pairing, to stop hospitals from repairing their own ventilators, and instead requires them to pay for a service call, which is bad like under normal circumstances, but like when there's no airplanes because there's a lockdown underway and also you need every ventilator you can get, this is literally lethal. So it just gets us out from under all of this, as well as, you know, quotidian stuff. Like if you buy an app from a Canadian app maker, a Canadian software author, as a Canadian, the payment for that app takes a round trip through Cupertino, California, Apple headquarters, and comes back 30% lighter. That's what Apple charges for payment processing. And I'll give you an idea of like what a normal payment processing fee is. Visa is being sued by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission for having payment processing fees in the 2 to 5% range, because that's considered monopolistic price gouging. Apple's charging 30% to process the payment. We could just have a Canadian app store. And the Canadian App Store would allow Canadian software authors and Canadian software users to transact mutually among each other without having to send 30% to a trillion-dollar company. And not only could Canadians use this store, but like anyone could. We could export this technology. We could export car-fixing tools. We could export insulin pump-fixing tools. We could export our app stores all around the world and become a powerhouse of repair, adaptation, and expansion for every smart product in the world that is currently serving as a kind of rent extractor for American tech companies.
Let me try to process that through my limited functions here. Because when you began, it sounded absurd. There's a guy in a kiosk in the kind of like low-grade mall near me, mm-hmm. who has really long painted fingernails, and he will fill your inkjet cartridges for you. We call him the inkjet wizard. And there's always like, is this legal? It's a lot cheaper than buying the ones from Canon, so let's just do it here. And when you started talking about inkjet fluid as Canada's response to 25% tariffs with our largest trading partner upon whom our economy relies, that began sounding absurd, that would be in any way a meaningful response. But as you kind of went forward, I think I got my head around it. And you start with things like a Gillette razor, where you've got to buy Gillette razors for the Gillette razor blade stick. And so you're locked into their system and you can't seem to find other ones that'll stick on. And you extend that basically to everything, to the point where you're not owning your own stuff anymore. You buy a Tesla car and it can actually do all sorts of things that it won't let you do. It has all sorts of self-driving capabilities and boost modes that you have to pay an extra subscription fee.
It won't let you use your whole battery. You have to pay extra to use the whole battery. It only gives you 50% by default, and you have to pay a subscription if you want to use the whole battery in your car.
So as I think you accurately predicted many years ago when you used to come onto my tech show, this model of like, we don't own our stuff anymore, we basically are buying entrance to a platform through which these companies are just constantly upselling us into ongoing subscription fees, all the while they're surveying us and sucking data from us. And if we try to fix our own stuff or buy a cable for our tech that is not from that same company, they could even shut it down and brick it. And you were warning me many years ago that this is the model through which everything is increasingly going to flow. And I think we could go through example after example. You're saying like John Deere farming equipment, where farmers, like, you bought a very expensive piece of machinery. There's a Canadian company that makes attachments for the front so that your tractor can do something else. It can be a thresher. Because you didn't buy your tractor. You're like in a licensing agreement with John Deere where they actually can like remotely control your shit. So first we've got that concept. And what you're saying is, Canada has willfully entered into a trade agreement with the states that not only allows them to do this, but criminalizes Canadians when we try to get around it. So 25% tariff on American goods, we're already paying huge tariffs, right, in the form of these fees. And I know this for my business because Canada Land, you know, you can become a Canada Land supporter through our website. But if you become a Canada Land supporter through Apple, through the podcast app on Apple, they take 30%. Like, it's many multiples, the fee. And we allow that, and we're happy to get those subscriptions because the convenience factor of the fact that they have market dominance and the majority of our listeners listen to us through Apple, that might be the only way we're getting that subscriber. So we'll take it. It's better than nothing. Stop me if I'm getting any of this wrong.
No, I think you're getting it right. I think the one gloss that I put on this is to point out that when you look at the balance sheets of these companies, that their most profitable line of business is this stuff, right? So this isn't just about getting Canadians a better deal. This is about striking the only companies that are keeping the S&P 500 afloat. You look at the last 10 years of the S&P 500, it's in the red except for big tech stocks.
Yeah.
And you're striking at their highest profit margin business lines while making Canadians richer, without making Canadians poorer by making anything more expensive.
Which is what a 25% tariff, if we retaliated with just that kind of brute force, dumb instrument, we would be screwing ourselves over while making life harder for them. And then it's a game of chicken as to who flinches first. Instead, we would just say, you know what, this was what you demanded the last time Chrystia Freeland sat down for the USMCA, that you have to respect America's digital locks. And really, in allowing this stuff to happen, like, how many things that used to be like a domestic industry are now mediated through an American tech company that takes like a big skim, you know, taxi driving, Uber and Lyft. You know, these are whole industries that we handed big chunks over to the states. So it's not quotidian piddly shit. They would notice this hits them where it hurts. This hits them in the tech sector, which is propping up their economy. That's your idea.
Yeah. And let me tell you how it worked with taxis. So right now, the biggest problem with, like, you know, Beck cabs or whatever doing their own app is that you don't know how many cars there are on the road that have that app. And because of that, you don't bother installing it. And because of that, no drivers install it either. But if a co-op of drivers or a livery cab company wanted to make an app and you were allowed to reverse engineer the Uber app on your phone, you could page a car with an Uber and then, using a back channel, find out whether that car was participating in another app. And if it was, tear down the ride you just booked and rebook it as a ride through the back app. So it would allow drivers and customers to always get the closest car. But when that car had chosen to get outside of Uber and when the rider had chosen to get outside of Uber, your phones could automatically sense that and split the difference rather than paying rent to Uber, the 30% that Uber is taking out of that ride. So everybody gets a cheaper ride. The driver gets a fatter paycheck and it just comes out of Uber's back end, which is mostly, like, you know, let's be clear, Saudi royal family, right? They're the big shareholders in Uber. So, you know, you're just screwing over SoftBank and the Saudi royal family and those people can all go jump. So that's fine.
I'm loving all of this and I'm going to keep going down this flight of fancy until I tell you why it would never work, which I'm pretty sure it wouldn't.
Okay.
But continue to dream for a moment. In addition to all of our gig workers are now in co-ops where they're not paid pennies on the dollar for what some foreign company makes, the consumer is getting a better deal. You can jailbreak your Tesla.
Yeah, yeah.
You bought it.
A Canadian garage can sell you a one-time fee that unlocks all the downloadable content, subscription content in your Tesla. And then when you sell your Tesla, you can charge more for your used Tesla than you could otherwise. Right now, if you do a bunch of aftermarket mods to your Chevy and then you sell that Chevy, it's worth more.
Yeah.
But if you pay for aftermarket mods to your Tesla, Tesla erases those mods.
Those mods being the subscriptions for the self-driving mode and this...
Yeah, use of the battery, whatever, all that other stuff.
So whatever, I can buy my beast mode and my battery mode and my this mode, but when I go to sell my Tesla, they just strip it and the next guy's got to... He's got
to buy it again. But you could keep it.
So now, in this Cory Doctorow Wonderland, I paid at my friendly neighborhood hacker at a garage to jailbreak my Tesla, and now I've got a Tesla that can do all and I... keep that value in the resale market. Canadians win.
Yeah.
Elon Musk loses.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to punish the guy with the Nazi salutes,
okay.
Don't just like make fun of him. Like take money out of his pocket. Take money out of his pocket.
Let's talk about how this helps Jesse Brown. Right now, Canadian law protects the digital locks on Apple Podcasts. But no, we're going to tear that down and we're going to offer subscription products, not just for podcasts, if you want premium podcasts, but for the much more lucrative app market. And I think you said something that if we had in Canada a completely open marketplace taking like a 5%, 4%, 3% fee instead of 30%, it wouldn't just be Canadians that could buy their apps there, but we could offer this to any consumers out in the world as long as they could get their iPhones jailbreaked through whatever means, And then we're now actually drinking their milkshake because instead of them being the place where all of the offshore dollars get sent to, it all passes through Canada, but at a much more favorable rate.
Yeah. Imagine you're like a smart, Waterloo engineering student who actually finishes your degree, unlike me. I dropped out of Waterloo after my first year there. But say you finish your degree at Waterloo. You go to some person who's sitting on some research in motion millions and you say, I want to start an app store. And I want you to give me some money, not just for the apps and not just for like a little jailbreaking dongle that unlocks your iPhone and lets you install the App Store. I want to do sales calls on the 10% of apps that produce 90% of the revenue for Apple. And I'm going to offer them special teaser rates to come and be not exclusive, just like on my store, but to offer a lower rate for everything they sell. So your Fortnite skins are 25% cheaper if you get them through the store. And then you go around the world and you say, hey, kids, do you like playing Fortnite? Install the Canadian App Store and all the you buy in the game is 25% cheaper. And Epic, who make Fortnite, still makes more money than they would with Apple.
Cory, it sounds great. Why the would they let us do it?
What are they going to do? Impose a tariff?
No, we're going to be like Cuba repairing like 1950s cars for the next 70 years. They're going to stop selling us this stuff.
I wouldn't bet on it. For one thing, as with Canadian pharma, one of the great beneficiaries of this kind of market is Americans, right? It's not like Americans are exempt from this ripoff. They're also printing their shopping lists with Winning Stallion semen, and so they will benefit from this gray market as well. Money talks, bullshit walks. If you think that Trump is going to invade us if we don't capitulate, then why talk about any kind of response to a tariff? Why talk about a 25% Canadian tariff? Why don't we just give them anything they want? I mean, that is more or less what Justin Trudeau did with USMCA. It didn't help, right? Like, we tried that once. It was a catastrophe. So why would we do it again?
Well, I don't think it's widely viewed as a catastrophe. Here's the actual question here. There is a current crisis in Canada around a very real problem. Like, I find this a delightful conversation. It's a really fun one. But if large tariffs are placed on our export markets, then Canadians suffer almost immediately. And the cost of everything is going to go up in Canada and industries. We can call them what we want. We can say that our natural resource-based economies are really backwards and we haven't kept up. We've capitulated to the Americans too much. But that is the country that we have right now. And people are going to suffer really badly. And the American system of forcing trade partners into their regime, some would argue this has been good for everybody. There are developing nations around the world that want into these trade relationships. Canada's lucky to have access to the American market, and it's a small price to pay to allow them to set the terms of tech. It's almost like if what you're saying is legitimate and this would seriously hurt them and threaten them, why would we endanger the basic relationship through which so much of our economy relies so that we could, legally use off-brand inkjet cartridges?
I mean, the thing Trump wants us to stop doing in order to avoid these tariffs is a thing we're already not doing, right, which is he wants us to stop criminals from using the Canadian border to enter America. That's just not a thing that is happening, right, in any real numbers.
But if we dance around and say, oh, you're right there, boss, that was a big problem. We got some helicopters there now, and it's all solved, to placate him and go back. That's what everybody wants right now, is just to go back.
I think if that were the case, they wouldn't bother, right? That the point here is to be seen to be doing something for their base. I don't think they really have a serious demand that Canada can meet. So sure, let's stipulate that Canada could put a giant inflatable helicopter at the border along with a bunch of standees of Canadian soldiers and like hand letter a sign that says Canadian Border Defense Force and then take a picture of it and show it to Trump. And he says, okay, no 25% tariff. Okay, why not? But we're talking here about a world in which Trump actually imposes the 25% tariff. So Trump imposes this 25% tariff. The fact that this is hard on Canadians, okay, true, does not mean that we shouldn't do the thing that that is hardest on Americans and makes things cheaper for Canadians, because one of the things you really want is to make things cheaper for Canadians. The other thing that's happening in the American market is it's really stagnant. So American capital has nowhere to go. You see this with the AI bubble and so on. There's just no alpha, right? There's no gains to be had because you have monopolists who sucked up all the margin. Now, as Jeff Bezos said when he started Amazon, your margin is my opportunity. So, you know, Canada could be a site to which American capital could flow to start businesses. I mean, you know, American venture capital is not committed to American business. They're committed to profit.
We try to describe ourselves as more than just drawers of water and hewer of wood, and you know that we actually are this information economy. Here's a golden opportunity to become one.
Yeah.
So maybe there is a reality to this. I mean, and maybe this doesn't have to be discussed in such extremes, because they're talking about like a targeted tariff for tariff, tit for tat. A lot of this is like brinksmanship of like, are we doing this permanently, or are we just demonstrating that we can? Because that's where this starts, is Trump demonstrating what he can do. So if we demonstrated that we can start with it, see how they like that, and that becomes a bargaining chip, we could back off perhaps, you know.
Although I wouldn't want us to.
I know you don't. I mean, Corey, I'm trying to figure out how much you're trying to sandwich a long-running desire of yours into a solution for Canada's crisis of the moment.
Oh, look, I'm Milton Friedman here. So Milton Friedman in the 70s, they would say, like, Milton, everyone thinks your ideas are terrible. You want to tear down the New Deal and return us to serfdom. How are you going to get people to go along with this? And he would say, in times of crisis, ideas can move from the periphery to the center. Our job is to keep good ideas lying around. And, you know, Satan took Milton Friedman to hell in the early 2000s. I like to think that every time that I quote his words, he like gargles a curse around that red hot spit poking out of his jaw as the demons turn it and flog him and pelt him with hot shit. But he was right. We live in Milton Friedman's world because his crank ideas during the oil crisis moved from the periphery to the center. We are having a Trump crisis. Right. And there are ideas from the periphery that are moving to the center right now that are ideas like we should have pogroms. Right. We should deny the humanity of people. Those are not good ideas moving from the periphery to the center. We should spy on more people. We should build gulags.
But your radical idea
is a good one.
Yeah, maybe. Corey, everything that you've put forward suggests that nothing is preordained or as it should be in the way that we consume technological services or use our tech, that all of this is the result of policy. All of this is the result of an oligarch class that has gotten its way with American lawmakers, American negotiators, and ultimately with Canadians who capitulated. And the reason why I have the phone that I have, and the reason why I don't have the phone that I could have, or the car that I could have, or the price that I could have, is because of all of these.
Or the subscriber dollars you could have.
Or the subscriber dollars I could have is because of these systems. What if that's not true? What if people like their Apple products and they could have a slightly more open Android product, but a lot of people choose their Apple product? They could have products and services that they could open up and repair themselves or modify themselves, but they like the user experience of the uniformity. They like the security that comes with that. What if people like it this way?
I've heard this a lot, and I think that it is an unfalsifiable proposition, and we have to look to the kind of actions of firms. So, you know, Apple probably understands its customers' preferences pretty well. They spend a lot of money researching it. They have a kind of God's eye view of how customers use it. And they don't act like their customers are happy with this stuff, right? They spend to block third-party payment apps, to block third-party manufacturer, to block third-party app stores. Apple and the other large manufacturers, they had a coalition that defeated, I believe it was 20 right-to-repair bills at the state level in the United States in 2018, 2019. And they spent like an ungodly fortune on this, right? They didn't just like, it wasn't just like a side hustle, right? Like they took money that they could have given to their shareholders and they spent a fortune. Now, if you were convinced that no Apple customer would ever take their iPhone to anywhere but the Genius Bar to get it fixed, the fact that there's a guy on a folding table at the mall with long, weird fingernails who can fix your iPhone shouldn't matter. But when you look at Tim Cook's letter to his investors in the first quarter of 2019, he opens every year with an investor letter. He says the biggest threat to Apple's profits is that customers are keeping their phones and getting them fixed instead of replacing them every year. And then that's the year that he kills 20 right-to-repair bills, right? So this is not a guy who acts like he has the best product. This is a guy who acts like if you had a choice, you'd take it. I'm skeptical of many things that Tim Cook says. And maybe I'm being selective when I believe him when he says this, but I think he's right about this. I think that if you didn't force Apple customers to use Apple's App Store and Apple's repair depots and Apple's parts and Apple's everything, that a significant fraction of them would choose to do otherwise, especially if the app vendors were offering discounts for people who chose to use a third-party app store.
Look, my kid is the same age that I was when I found the right screwdriver that I could open up the back of my 386 and install my own math coprocessor and extra RAM so that I could run 3D animation software. And those are delights that my child will never know. My children have never opened up an electronic device in their lives. And I would love to set back the clock, and I would love for them to know a little bit about what is under that beautiful piece of molded plastic. But that's not the world we live in anymore. But I get inspired when I talk to you. Maybe it could be. Maybe it could be.
No one came down off a mountain on two stone tablets and said that everything is going to be glued shut instead of screwed shut from now on. It was a choice we made. It's a policy choice we made in living memory. People are very happy to seek out a bargain. People drive around the block looking for gas that's like, you know, 1 cent a liter cheaper. You're telling me that, you know, kids who are trying to spend their pocket money wisely won't install another app to save 30% on their Fortnite skins? I think they will. I certainly would have.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a poor student, we shopped at the used food store where you could buy open packages of food for a nickel that people had opened up in the grocery store and taken a handful out of, right? You know, this is a market that is waiting to be tapped.
You know, I'm on this treadmill where I'm looking to buy a new phone. And I'm like, why am I looking to buy a new phone? It's because my old iPhone is slow ever since I was sort of forced into updating the iOS. And the new one's got a better camera. If I could go and swap out the camera for $100, mm-hmm. like why am I thinking of going and buying a $1,500 camera?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But then I kind of think like, it's the new one. I want the new one.
Right.
I can talk myself into that when I don't have a choice because my phone's just getting increasingly slow. But if I had that choice, you know, if I had $100 for a new camera.
And a nice fresh battery.
And a nice fresh battery versus the $1,500 new purchase,
mm-hmm.
I would do that. Cory Doctorow, it's always mind-boggling. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. It was nice to talk to you again.
That is your Canada Land episode. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about it. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com, and I post sometimes to Blue Sky. You can find me there. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson, audio production and editing from Tristan Capicione. Max Collins is our director of audio, and Max also did the fact check on this episode. Our theme music is by So Called Syndication, handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by